say, is over pretty well. And because it leaves them with a real dearth, a void of news. Because we live in such a censored system today, we hardly get anything that really matters to us in any real honest detail. As I say, what we do get, definitely, is the gossip stuff. And Jeffrey Epstein managed to fulfill a lot of roles with the sex scandal. That's like a soap or a good movie. The sex and subterfuge, possible blackmail, possible big intelligence agency operation, which everybody pretty well agrees upon. And then the clumsy way it was all ended, or appeared to be ended, that no one really believes in. And then the sudden silence again about it from governments and et cetera. It's quite something, isn't it? But it's over. A lot of folk will say it's sad. I'm not kidding you. Because we live in such a censored, literally a censored system today with the most powerful people and the most powerful organizations running the show now. Rather openly too, and they're not beating around the bush about going after different people who just say things or even think things or even ask questions, for goodness sake. We live in such a polarized society now. It just appears to be, if you really believe the media, without realizing it, most of what you get from the media now with the clashes of different groups, etc. in the States, is often orchestrated by the intelligence services themselves, running both sides of it. That's rather standard too. And if you fall victim to jumping on board through emotion, you're some kind of loser in reality. I'm not kidding you. Because I gave talks years and years ago about what was shown in Britain many years ago when Britain had some type of free press where they could at least talk about other countries. That was a favourite of Britain. They could also criticise other countries or show documentaries on other countries on certain things that happened, but they were never mentioned what was happening inside Britain itself, naturally. But I can remember they showed a documentary, a long one too, about what they called racism in America and so-called neo-Nazi groups. And they showed you a place, and I don't know if it was Chicago or somewhere, wherever it was, anyway, one of the big cities, New York or Chicago. And they had a raid, they did a raid on, I suppose, a neo-Nazi outfit there. And they caught up, they rounded up well over 100 people. But the time they sorted out all the people who attended it, in fact, that most of them belonged to different government agencies that were intent on finding out who the neo-Nazis were. So really, they actually arrested two people and they just walked in off the street. It was winter and they wanted a coffee and a free donut. So you really have to laugh at this kind of stuff as they orchestrate it by your own government agencies to keep a lot of mythologies alive in a sense, because certain powers benefit from mythologies like that. But it's quite amazing to watch this happen. And that particular documentary, it was a long one. He showed them doing the same thing in different cities in the US. It was pretty well the same results, actually. So they had so many different agencies, not just the FBI, local police, all undercover, all doing the same kind of things. And generally, too, the organizations had been set up by government agents posing as the leaders of these groups and so on. So you have to be awfully, awfully, awfully careful, folks, that you don't fall into these traps, really. And if you think a clash on the streets with well-funded groups and well-publicized groups is going to fix anything, yeah, go away, because that's not how the world works at all these days. It doesn't work like that. Not in the least. Not these days. And really, it's like a massive social experiment to watch it all happening today. These are the techniques which were used in European countries even long before World War II started, where they created the communists, of course, were the first ones based in the Soviet Union. And once they had got that over, they were trying to do the same in Germany and other countries too. And that caused real clashes in the streets with different factions. They were very, very real indeed, because communism was trying to definitely take over. Today, communism has mutated into the appearance of social justice often and uses the same kind of rhetoric and language. But you can tell by what's being pushed, it's the same type of socialist government control. Don't forget that in socialism, the state is all powerful. You can't fight the state by creating the opposition of itself. You can't do it. And so you have, I mean, even the Nazi organization, remember, it's National Socialism versus the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, or the Warsaw Pact countries after World War II and so on. So anyway, you definitely have the semblance of the same thing being pushed today. Nothing you've been taught really is true about the past when it comes to these big organizations and the wars, because you can go into looking at the funding of the Soviet Union, very, very old articles and books about it too. They didn't have an axe to grind at the time, many of them. And they told us about the massive aid given to the Soviet their bloc, really, right after the revolution. And the US put tremendous government money and organizational power into feeding the people, clothing them, and so on. And so did Canada and other countries too. They thought it was, the way it was the publicized, it was going to be a good thing, you see. And we're all schmucks, in a sense, to fall for sob stories and human interest stories. You can, that's what's counted upon with propaganda. But you have to understand, too, that the Soviet system wasn't meant to stop with Russia or its satellites. It was meant to spread around the whole planet, remember. This idea of democracy was laughed at, sometimes quite rightly so, in fact, because we never really had it anywhere. And the Soviet system always promises you, and this is the thing, it's always for a better tomorrow, a utopia down the road, just over the horizon. You might not live to see, but if you have any children at all, which is probably these days very unusual almost, then, you know, your children will see it. That was the kind of promise that the people were taught to believe in. And all through the Cold War too, even during World War II, don't forget that the West kept the Soviet system alive. Tremendous money and goods and weaponry and so on was all shipped off to the Soviet Union all through the war, to the expense of all the Western countries that supplied the shipping and so on, because many of them got sunk by U-boats and so on. And books were written about that too, and how the U.S. supplied them throughout the war with aircraft and heavy-duty weaponry and tanks, etc., etc. But not only that, when it was all over and done with, and eventually they nicknamed Stalin the Big Bad Bear again, you know, because we lived in a world of shapeshifters, apparently, because Uncle Joe became a Big Bad Bear, because you always need, what's for the public's control, that is, an enemy or a perceived enemy to make them basically hug their own governments. That's what that's for, that Cold War-type mentality. And so they turned them into a potential foe. Now, if you have a foe, why would you feed them all through the Cold War? Why would Canada and the US be competing every year for the contract to supply the Soviet Union to all the countries with massive amounts of grain, etc.? But because he did, right up to the bitter end of the Cold War. So nothing's ever as it seems to be. Don't ever think. And again, as I said before, you'll find with some of the excellent books written by defectors, or had written for them, basically. Most books today are all ghostwritten in every country. So just because a person has a name on it, even folk you might know, actually, different, even near to your heart businesses, you probably find that their books are ghostwritten if you read into them. But that's how it's done. But some of these people who worked with them on their own life stories on the KGB, etc., in Russia, gave you a different story altogether of the class system which they belonged to themselves. I can remember what they did in Britain too after the Cold War was to admit, I think it was shown in Canada too, they admitted that really they're a class system, definitely, in the Soviet Union. Because power creates the class system, and then eventually you have those who are in at the start of it all, who get all the medals and the gongs, etc., and they're given their holiday homes, etc., in the forest, and servants to take care of them, because they're very important people, you see. Then you have this class system. Then their children become the future generals, or they also work in the KGB. And so it was an hereditary organization right to its bitter end. And afterwards, too, when they changed the name of it, after the Soviet Union changed, it's still the same. It's much like the Western world, too. The Western world is awfully good at hiring from its own ranks of civil servants, you know, intergenerational civil servants, agents, of course, and secret police and all that kind of thing. That's how most countries do it, and Russia is no exception. So anyway, we're living in a system where most of the past isn't taught to you. But all the defectors in Russia, of all of them, none of them ever complained, I think, that they left the country because they weren't getting enough of the material goods that the West had to offer. They already, at that level at least defectors from the wealthy families, you might say, or important families, had all the material goods, and they lived equivalent lifestyles. Even the bureaucrats who left, they had equivalent lifestyles with better housing or apartments and all the latest gadgets and gizmos and electronics, all that kind of stuff, as their counterparts in the West. So it wasn't because they lacked anything they left. But the rest of the public, as in most countries, you're left eating the lowest kind of foods too, as they keep the budgets and restrained and all the rest of it. You know, this is remember too, the Soviet Union shared its data, and the West shared its data with the Soviet Union from their scientific associations. That was always what surprised me, because every year, you'd read about the big scientific meetings and specialist scientific meetings for different areas of science and so on. Every year, they back and forth towards the Soviet Union, even though if you did a basic study into the Cold War at that period, and the books were put out, they're just churned out about the Cold War and what the strategy meant. And it said that the country with the most leading expertise in scientific areas, they could be applied into industry or weaponry, they would come out as the winners, you see. So if that was the case, why would you allow your top scientists in all different areas to go over and meet their counterparts in the Soviet Union and exchange all their data? I mean, you got to use your own head here and really laugh at an awful lot of it. There's nothing really that comes out even during a Cold War era. This will happen again. It's kind of happening again as they make the enemies reappear as a big bad bear, etc. And China, far from becoming your supplier of all your goods, as it was set up to do by us, of course, by, I hate to say us, but there are countries that own us as well. They set them up to be the manufacturer. Now the Chinese are supposedly a big threat as well. Well, you have to get off this bandwagon on this roller coaster that lead you in endless circles your entire life if you really believed in it all, because it didn't really happen that way. Nothing happens by itself like that. It's made to happen. It is made to happen, and it's planned that way. The greatest big things that happens in our lifetime happen to be planned that way. There's nothing that's unforeseen, really. If a meteor came in, perhaps there would be a chance and even then, the big boys have made stacks of preparations across the planet for a wealthy and elite to live with a scientific elite for them, so they can hopefully survive somewhere in the world, or some of the many groups will survive if a massive impact happens because of something from outer space, as an example. But for the rest of us, no, we are expendable. We saw that in so many of the disaster movies, the kind of deep impact type movies that we've seen. We also saw it with that terrible movie with its tremendous story of an elite surviving after the Earth crust just happens to start breaking up and shifting and all that, and then the seas just overwhelm previous nations. That was 2012, I think they called the movie, where the elite, again, the wealthy elite, could buy passage on these specially designed ships, designed naturally in China, because they were the only places left really who could manufacture it in a hurry. Since no one else has got the industry, they deindustrialized and gave it to China. So the elite would survive because he could buy seats on it and berths on it, and that a scientific elite would survive with them. And in the movie itself, remember, they said too that when they got on board the ships, well, these people were all selected, they're talking about all the rest of the crew and the rest of the people, and so they're selected for their genetic potential, good genes basically, good health and genes and intellect, etc., for a stock to repopulate the planet. So again, eugenics there. So you get the ultra rich and wealthy, who naturally must be better than anybody else because they're rich and wealthy, right? That's literally in eugenics. Charles Darwin talked about this himself, you know, and Galton Darwin too. Quite amazing. So so the rich would obviously had proven themselves worthy because they became rich, and if they held on to it for a few generations, then they were worthy to go. The rest of the people would show by their merit would be through intellect and scientific abilities and things like that, and technical abilities, so they'd be chosen for that. But they'd have to also have the proper genes and good genes. And so they did genetic background checks and all the rest of it. Like that. It's amazing how they bring it all into it. And you think you're living in a classless society. you have to have a chuckle once in a while, eh? Don't you? But again, Orwell did say it in 1984, some are more equal than others in such utopias. And that's the world we're going into right now. Academia, unfortunately, is a tremendous snobbish field today. It's so snobbish with so many, I guess just too many people across the planet going into it. It reminds me of Kung Fu. And I can remember, you see, I can remember when Kung Fu was made famous on television by the series called like Kung Fu or Kane or whatever it was, with David Carradine, and all the youngsters and children were around kicking themselves and giving themselves bruises all over the place by trying to emulate what they saw. And this became awfully, awfully popular, naturally. And then the movies came out as well, but Kung Fu is kind of where you looked as Kung Fu. And if you went to a Chinese restaurant in Britain, for instance, you'd suddenly see, see these guys that came from China, and their chests were out really strong and proud, you know. And because everybody in Britain thought that these guys almost know Kung Fu, you see. So they gave them more respect. And these Chinese guys could see that. So they strutted around as though they were all champions of Kung Fu. And of course, when you talk to them and say, well, they didn't know it at all. It was just as entertaining to them to watch on TV as you, because they'd never studied Kung Fu either. At least that was honesty. Whereas, but again, the people perceive it differently. Oh, like they must all know that. It's the same in academia, which again, is like getting an infection. If you go into the higher learning courses and you pass exams, which are meant for, broadly speaking, for most folk to pass, right? Then you get a little bit of praises from different masters and so on, and you get a little bit of paper. And in some cases, you might have to be called a different title, you see. And you'll swagger around, just like the guys in Kung Fu or Chinese restaurants, and you know. And they've trained the public to look up to people, you see, who get churned out of universities, mainly with useless degrees, because they'll never get work in what they're doing. Most people, so many people in different scientific areas, literally make a career, and they get courses in this, by the way, a career on how to live off grants for your entire life. So they get taught how to procure the grants. They have courses in them, you know. And how to put, like salesmen. And you become a salesman, or you employ the companies to do it for you to get grants, and then you can live off grants. And you can, for years, how many times did you see, like the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and it did this for a while. It would sell a little, at the end of the year, you've got to show something for the money, right, that you're getting. And they would say something like, some countries, such as France, have said a drink of red wine once every evening will extend your life and cut down blood pressure and help your heart, you know. And folk would lap this, well, did you know what they said? So everybody would start, you know, and all the wine manufacturers were awfully happy then. And then maybe 2 or 3 years later, you see the same organization telling them white wine was better. And then a few years later, they tell you that no alcohol at all was good for you. So come on here, come on, eh? Come on. And if you notice in the newspapers, they have these aggregate sites too. If you click on something from a known newspaper or whatever, they'll take you at like an aggregate little news thing. They'll try to lead you in circles, reading silly articles after silly articles to pass your life away, as they monitor you, watching them and reading them all. But they'll take you into these little scientists have found scientists. There's 1,000 scientists have found, you know, every day something. And I read the article a few years ago, and I think I mentioned it on a radio show, in fact. And I read off a bigger study on these reports that said that most of these reports are found to be untrue in 2 or 3 years' time. Because some other scientific group will get a grant to find out something that's the opposite. They just make stuff up. That's how bad things really are today. So you can get a career making things up and passing out there as real news. And I even read articles from guys who worked and got employed by big pharma companies to give them great write-ups on certain drugs and so on, and they actually admitted that without giving their names out. They can't do that. And they did 2 or 3 shows on television some years back were, and of course they're in the shadows, but admitting to what they'd done and they made a good living off it, and they publicised this kind of stuff. There's so much deception out there that it's not funny at all. And it seems to be the norm across the board, is deception today. And it can't be anything else, I suppose, really, when you think that most things today are built on a very materialistic scientific basis, where everything must generate income, money, either personally or some other way. And so they've got to give out lots of any kind of articles, just spew them out to bring out, get income, etc. And deceiving people then is okay, apparently. I mean, governments do it all the time, right? And they do, of course they do. It's sad to me to really think that the conditioning of the human mind has been almost so perfect that most folk never question anything at all anymore. They just accept the authorized view on things, like Brzezinski said they would do eventually. We're long past that stage. We've passed that a long time ago. But most folk really, really do. And even the sciences of conning people are so tremendously accurate now, because we're so well studied, so well continuously studied. So, in fact, if you're not easily malleable or manipulated by powers from people you won't even meet generally, they're finding out that on the internet, you see, they know exactly what will get you going in a certain article or whatever it happens to be, and they'll give you a whole bunch of other ones to follow because they're watching you, and they'll give you all these suggestions. It isn't just the big ones that are doing, like Google, you know, they're all pretty well doing it. And there's lots of deceptive ones too that say that they're not, but of course they are, because they make money off you and studying you and passing information on to others who study and watch you and manipulate you. As I say, it's so sad because everything comes down to money. Everything in the system depends on money. Even though money, as we've been taught to believe in it, is not real. It's not real at all. Money at one time had to be physical and to be accepted. It had to be physical, something you could hold. Even the weight of money, they called it the weight of money when it's coin. At one time, a coin, you could live on a coin for a whole week or maybe a month if it was gold, and longer than that. But the money system, since it is in control of everything, is the most powerful instrument in existence. I don't care what it's called, or if it's even abstract today, it's still the most powerful thing, because everything on the planet depends on it. Everything. And don't forget, during the Great Depression, you find that all the factories still existed. The companies that supplied fuel for factories and everything else still existed. The vehicles to transport goods, etc., all still existed. But everything stopped when the money stopped flowing. Which sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? But that's what happened. No one works when there's no money to get paid with. It's a powerful thing. And governments are panicking because then they can't govern. Because the folk, what is there to govern? People won't listen to you. And also you'll get blamed for helping it to happen in the first place, or not, or allowing it to happen. So you got a system where gangsterism runs the system. Now, gangsterism is often very, very legitimate in a sense. I guess that's the right word for it, really. When it's necessary, it's made itself necessary, and there is no competition, then of course it is. It's become the legitimate form when there's no competition, even though it is gangsterism. Because if it's based on nothing, and yet money's supposed to be based on something, you see, then it's a con game. And it's the biggest con in the world, of course. Countries like Britain, and many countries with the same kind of system, had money going way back for centuries based on weight. And it was worked out with different metals, and from the top right down to lesser metals, and the value per pound, the weight of pound, the pound was a weight. And so you had 240 pennies, for instance, would give you £1. And so that was how you measured the pennies. And you had the same when it came to silver, which, again, you had to have so much of the coinage, like sixpences or even three pennies, the three penny pieces, which are silver at one time. There's enough of them all counted out. We had to weigh 1 pound. And that's why the pound is so called the pound today in the UK. It was basically on a value of that. So no matter what happens, you'd always have that same thing on the go. And of course, the great guys who helped take it all over with the Bretton Woods Agreement and all the rest of it, took everything off the gold currency standard, and gold was at the very top, and then silver. And the British pound was based really on sterling silver. And so it was emulated across the whole planet, that same kind of standard. It still had gold currency at the top of it too, where you could have guineas at one point in gold. And that kind of thing. But silver was the very, very top. And then you had silver, and then you had brass, and then you had pennies. So it worked out really well until it took you all off it. Well, if you're off it and there's nothing tangible anymore, well, then you can inflate it wherever you want to. And what they mean by that, they keep just printing money off, and now they just add it to a computer screen, that's your money. And keep adding zeros to the end of the number. And that's where we are today. And each time they do it, you see, whatever currency it was, whatever currency they pretend it was based on, becomes more and more diminished in purchasing power. You just look back, and you can do it on the internet so easily now, on what, say, $1 million or £1 million was worth in 1900 in purchasing power, when you compare it to today, how many millions you would need today to get that same amount of purchasing power and buying different articles and so on. That's how they work out. We're so devalued, and with every crash, they always devalue it more. A crash is often designed to be so, with the compliance and authority of government, in order to bring and lessen the worth, the actual buying purchasing power of that currency. That's why they do it every so often, and it's getting ready to do it again, as you all well know. It's a racket. There's no need. Actually, there's no need that you couldn't live on £1 today if it still had the same value it had in say, 1900. You'd live on that for a good week, awfully well, in fact, and eat awfully well, too. There's no reason why you can't. It's because of the cons of money. Until eventually you have to earn £10,000 a month to pay the rent on a little one-room place for a month. That's where you're going with it all. But again, that's a racket. So governments are not really what you think they are. Definitely not today. They work with academia, the con men that are churned out, with a tremendous arrogance. The same arrogance we used to see with the class system. They churn them out, and they automatically are trained in a communistic fashion, because a lot of the techniques used today from communism. Communism was way up there and using scientific methods on study and manipulation. And part of the communist technique for planned change was to enforce the belief in them that don't trust anybody over 30, for instance, was a common slogan, to get the generations separated. Because with the younger generation, you can plan the change as much easier, because they will implement it. They won't listen to any older folk who have experience and wisdom. So you can get rapid change. And universities today are churned out the same way. And they are arrogant, and they swagger, and they actually will look at everybody older than themselves as though they're obsolete in a sense, because they've been trained to see them that way. It's an anti-human system, because what the system is being managed by is a system, or where it's supposed to go, is into an anti-human system. When you have rights taken away from you because of your opinions, or your thoughts even, or even asking, being curious and asking questions can get you in trouble. That's where it's all going. And then you're not living in a really humane human system at all. And that's planned behavioural changes. That's what we're going through right now with all the changes, where opinions must be standardised, and that they really mean standardised opinions. And they have all the professionals that they churn out universities in different areas, getting good money, getting paid. You always bribe the henchmen, and of course you can have henchmen of the mind, of course. And these are the scientific managers, the psychological managers of the mind, paid awfully well to manage us, for the masters at the top, they pay them awfully well. You'll find within these characters who work like that and who have no conscience about it, that there's a high level of psychopathy, and that's not there by chance either. We also live in a system were the traditional values that kept us, the values we used to have kept us secure to an extent, even through terrible times, because we could help each other out. We had common cultures, for instance, common values, and folk would help each other out. Before all these pretended social services, all these incredible agencies that multi-layered, that dominate everybody and families and everyone else that you have today, people helped each other out. It was a humane thing to do. And of people, even atheists would say it was a Christian thing to do, because it was. The values came from an old religious background, regardless of the religions themselves. And so it worked well in times of crisis for the people. But that's been destroyed as well. And you're supposed to basically rely on various forms of unemployment, welfare, social assistance, experts, again, that are churned out from colleges and universities to take care of things for you, you see. Depending, and again, even that's all politicized. Now, it depends who you are. If you want help, what category you belong to, is that's how bad things are now, as they divide up into multi-leveled victimhood areas, you see, who gets priority and help and all the rest of it. Well, I'm so surprised that people even put up with this nonsense, because, see, power will always derive more power from and guaranteed power from areas that will help the most. That's why I'll keep certain areas and certain groups of people suppressed. They'll count them for a voting block. When your income is, and literally livelihood, it's just survival depends eventually on the state supplying you with financial needs and so on, then you can pretty well guarantee a voting block for that, you see. It's guaranteed. Every group of people out there, I don't care who you are at all, if you belong to, identify with some kind of group or other, you'll be used down the road by those at the very, very top who have divided and conquered everybody. The US had so much going for it for such a long, long time, and volumes were put out by the United States. And yes, the money was in there early, and the money managers were in there early, and they took over, unfortunately, the same role that Britain had, as under the pretense of being a policeman to the world, and until they're exhausted, as many in Britain, in academia at the top at that time, who worked for the big organizations, the Ronshi for International Fuel, that runs everything, who planned the global society and so on, and who planned for the US to take over. And Arnold Toynbee and others mentioned the US would literally run itself into the ground as the, quote, policeman of the world. But then it would be exhausted by wars and bankruptcies and so on, because wars are expensive. And then you create a massive welfare state out of them too, and that further destroys you because it's non-productive. And yet more wars come along, and you got a dwindling tax base as the ultra-rich all bank offshore and real tangible goods like real estate. That's why they call it real estate. And everyone's left with useless currency that doesn't work anymore and is so devalued. Old story, mind you, but it's a shame, because the US had a lot going for it, but because it was an industrial giant with great resources and a large population, very quickly grown, basically a large population, then naturally gangsters move in, and the system basically bleeds the general population for taxes and so on, which often go off to the very areas I'm talking about now, like science and technologies that end up dominating you. And then again, from academia, once again, you still have eugenics running wild with so many different areas that really are simply practicing the beliefs in eugenics and inferior types and all this kind of stuff. And I'm telling you, don't think that you're in some kind of top. It's like Julian Huxley was a eugenicist, remember? And the left wing praises him for being a founding member of Planned Parenthood. But he believed in eugenics, and he said that all the helpers and so on would eventually, he said, expect to get in to this. It's almost like he was talking about the ARCs in 2012 and that kind of scenario. He said they expect to come in to this upper echelon to manage the planet, and only to be terribly disappointed that they themselves don't fit the bill, in a sense, that they haven't got the right stuff yet. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but that's how he put it in his speeches and in his books. So they'd be used and then disposed of, you see. That's always the way it goes. Because in their mind, they were going to be, and he used the phrase too. He's often said that he coined it, but it's not quite true. But he certainly used this term transhuman. He's a transhumanist. And in his mind at the time, they were the natural rulers of the planet. Old families, intellectual elites who had money, power, and scientific knowledge too. He added that into it. So they would be entrepreneurs in a sense that used sciences or employed sciences to manage everything, like the people today who've been presented to you as stars because they're awfully rich and governments basically make their businesses by giving them all the grants, free grants and everything, and then promote them as some kind of geniuses that you should follow. And that's what we're seeing, transhumanists. But they also say that their goal is to alter humanity because humans were made imperfect, just like the world, back to the old Garden of Eden analogy. You know, the world was left imperfect, you see? But the master builders will then perfect it. Now, they're talking about humanity and the planet and everything on the planet. The same things that came out of Monsanto years ago and those who were manipulating genes of plants, they were going to perfect everything. And then we saw it coming from the geneticists to deal with biology for humans. And they were saying the same thing, that yes, all classes this and classes that. And they would basically allow the fear types to die off, etc., etc., etc. Like H.G. Wells did in his book, A Modern Utopia. So we're living through it. It's just that folk get caught up in the rhetoric, and that they, so much so that this overload of data, that they don't recognize what they're living through. They get caught up in the emotions. So many sites out there now are, what side are you on, this or that or whatever, you see. And the first rule, the first real rule in any kind of warfare, or even in martial arts, is if you lose control over emotion, you've lost everything right away. You're a goner. A good example of that, you'll see it in some sports, at least you see it with old sports. The boxer, who used to be called Cassius Clay and then called himself Muhammad Ali, would goad his opponents and by using the media before the bouts happened, sometimes starting a month, 2 months in advance, just goading them, a lot of comments he'd make and so on. He was perfect for that technique of getting the person to just lose it, you see. So the time they get in the ring, the person is ready to, he's just so angry at him. He's lost his, if he gets up and he's been taught and he get beaten, so Muhammad Ali would always win, you see. But that was the trick of it. That was a trick that he used to good effect for his particular sport. And it's the same with all types of warfare. Gaining knowledge is a battle. Gaining true knowledge is almost impossible in today's age, because through the 90s especially, libraries were giving lists of books, and I read articles on it too, on shows where they were told what to dump, all the books to dump, and so, and eradicate. Don't worry, it'll be on the internet, you see. And I knew before I even got a darn computer, and I only use a computer just for the show. I even said it in the 90s, because I didn't have one. I said, when I was on shows, I said, I don't want a computer, really, because if I ever get one, it'll be just for shows, because it's not out there to help me, you see. So once all the books, etc., were up there, and so, but then you started to find you got different versions of the books on the internet, or half the books would be gone, or you'd see whole chapters were gone, and then eventually whole books were gone. It's quick, it's down the memory hole, as predicted, and I said that would happen in the 90s. Everything's so obvious, and then thought, well, don't worry, we can burn this and all the rest of it. Yeah, yeah. Well, guess where the power is, folks? Because, you see, eventually they don't outlaw this, they just make them obsolete with the newer computers. So eventually your computers that don't have drives, you see, for CDs and DVDs. And it's designed to go that way. Unless you really hold on to old computers and store them awfully well with spare parts and so on, so that you can still play, basically, old format stuff that you've saved down the road when so much knowledge is gone. The greatest technique that's used by tyrants today, apart from massive surveillance like never before, I mean, this is the greatest dream that they could never have in the past, is total observation of every individual in order to keep them safe from terrorism, you see? Never had that ever. What a dream, eh? they'll never stop using it. It's going to get worse and worse. They've trained most of the people, the younger folk, that it's quite normal. They don't mind. Most of them don't mind. And that's quite something, quite a step forward for tyranny, really, where they've trained the victims not to mind. And the victims don't even see themselves as victims because they get all the free goodies to go along with it, etc. Some years ago, I mentioned articles about behavior modification by governments. And you've got behavior change practical guide here for governments, common good behavior change, communicators and behavior, planning for behavioral change seminars, universities and so on, on behalf of governments, and the theory of planned behavior, etc. On and on and on it goes. And these aren't hobbies, folks. These are meant to actually be used, and they are used all the time on us. And folk don't realize it. And that's awfully sad that people have given up, as predicted by the people who study you and publish so many of their books and publications. You give up everything for little freebie this and freebie that, for instance. I'll try to find one little article here. Well, here's an example here, for instance, and I think I used this a few years back, by the panels which actually work with a government. It doesn't matter which government it is, they're there permanently now. And one of them is, over the last decade, there's been increasing recognition in the UK of the complexity of managing the performance of public policy. Now, the same one in the States and elsewhere too, same organisations, because I'd read them from different countries. Anyway, this is the British one, and or one of them, I should say, articles. So the Prime Minister's strategy unit, right, in 2002, published a report introducing the concept of public value to the UK policy environment. And public value refers to the value created by government through services, laws, regulation, and other interventions. The report identified three key dimensions of public value: outcomes, delivery of services, and trust. That's what you must have to keep the people obedient and everything working. You must have at least these, right? And then highlighted the centrality of public preferences across all three dimensions in determining that value. It argued that value only exists if citizens, individually or collectively, are willing to give up something in return for what you're offering, right? This might involve monetary sacrifice, e.g. taxes and charges, but also granting coercive powers to the states, right? Where they can manipulate, can I force you along, you know what I'm saying? In return, such as in return for security. We'll give you security, but it costs you. And or again, coercive power and disclosing information that we know all about you and what you're doing, what you look at, and giving time or other resources. And as an example, they say, such as blood. Huh? No kidding you. Often then, this involves changing behavior. And this is much easier to achieve if policymakers give greater weight to public preferences for trustworthy government, due process, and fair treatment in legitimizing this change. It goes on and on and on. Now, I tell you right now, down the road, you're going to get... And they go into the different books and publications they use themselves on, such as Halpern, Bates and Bales, 2003, an introduction into the social psychological literature on the factors which underpin individual and group behaviour. And then it tells you with how this understanding can be used to influence or actually achieve behavioural changes in the populations. It really throws out the window the idea that you're living through your own life. Most folk really do think, oh, I'm still, I plan, oh, I know what my opinions are. You know, they gave me my opinions, you know. Even what they look at has been given to them. But there's nothing new in it, folks. I mean, this is how things really work. And the public have no idea. Most of them have no idea at all. It's kind of like what they said about communism. They tried to get communist uprisings in different countries in the West, including Britain, but they couldn't get the workers to go up in revolution because the workers were too busy working, you see. Well, it's the same thing with all the information on what's happening and have been done to you. What's on the side of the manipulators is the fact that folk are too busy, generally making the income to pay their taxes, to pay for security, to pay to be studied by governments and agencies galore and all that kind of stuff, to even read the stuff themselves and all what's been done to them. But what they go through is they can offer you little freebies, mousetraps and so on, if you just sign on here and sign on there, and you get a discount at grocery stores and discount at pharmacies and discount here and discount there. These aren't discounts, folks. They're charging the normal price. The folk who won't join their special cards and customer preferences and so on, they're getting penalised with higher charges. That's what it is. They're not losing money by giving you what you think is something cheaper. It's all psychology. And unfortunately, it works with most people. Now, I had no idea what I was going to talk about tonight, because really, as I say, there's hardly anything in the news except absolute fabricated nonsense. When I looked at one of the papers today, and all they had at the top was Prince Harry, I think it was, and Meghan, his wife, flying off to some multi-millionaire's billionaire's paradise island somewhere. From just a squandering of massive monies and so on, a private jet, yadda yadda. As they tell us, the same characters were telling us recently, we've got to cut back and causing too much pollution and stop using, you know, fuel, etc. And they jet all over the planet on their private jets, etc. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Anyway, I had no idea what I was going to talk about, because there's a dearth of news, as I say, and people are really bewailing the fact that Jeffrey Epstein's gone to an extent, because if they dragged this out for a while, that's all you'd have got for months, maybe even a year, is the ongoing revelations and etc. of the scandal. But it's all gone now, and it won't go any further, because too many powerful forces are... you can't expose these forces, folks. Can't be done. And that's the way it is in this so-called democracy that we all live in. But before I go tonight... Hey, as I'm prattling on here, as I said, nothing ready to even prattle about, but I'll put a few links. One is to break Google monopoly on search and make its index public. They're talking about these things. It won't make any difference, because that happened to a Standard Trust oil company, and it's been revealed and actually authenticated that old Rockefeller's trust was broken up into different companies, pretending to be different, but all in reality were the subsidiaries of Standard Oil. That's out. So that's all they do, folks. Everything is deception and perception management. What you perceive and what you're told makes your perceptions into what you think is reality. It doesn't. It's still all privately owned for the same purposes. And power doesn't... Do you really think that power ever gives itself up? It doesn't happen. That's why countries go to war. Countries go to war because they both want each other's power, or one wants the other person's country for power. They don't give it up. It doesn't happen. It's the same with the corporations. Remember, too, getting back to eugenics, etc. I mentioned so many times the First Global Revolution, which was published by the Club of Rome, a big think tank for the eugenicists. Amazing stuff they've turned out, by the way. An elitist system that quite openly talks about the fact that democracy is not working, which we know is a joke anyway. It was supposed to keep us all pretending to ourselves in a self-delusional state of mind that we're free. But the Club of Rome worked for the elites. They're one of the big think tanks of how to implement a new system. And they said, in searching for a new enemy to unite us, that's from the First Global Revolution, published by the Club of Rome, we came up, right? Because we're given the job of finding a way to unite the planet for the elite. We came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortage, famine and the like would fit the bill. Because that's what they're asked to do, find something that the public could swallow, right? So that they'd all have to listen and obey a new system of being governed. That's what it really means. So they go on to say here, all these dangers are caused by human intervention. The real enemy then is humanity itself, meaning all of you lot. Okay? And don't forget too, I mean, Barack Obama was, there's no, anybody who's picked, I don't care what ethnic group you think you identify with or you'll vote for, everybody at the top is all picked by the same club, folks. And Barack Obama was the same. Because he went to Africa too for visits, and he told them too. Because don't forget this whole idea of sustainability. The Africans aren't going to get their central heating or central air conditioning, the average family there. They're not going to get all their fridges to keep everything good. They aren't going to get things to keep them healthy and help them get healthier and survive better. But he said, ultimately, if you think about all the youth that everybody has mentioned here in Africa, everybody is raising living standards to the point where everybody has got a car and everybody has got air conditioning and everybody has got a big house. Well, the planet will boil over unless we find new ways of producing energy. What he's telling them is that population reduction, eh? And lots of articles and papers too put out by the elites themselves and the Gates foundations and so on, and Rockefeller foundations, all go on to different projections of tomorrow, you know. One of them is called The Country School of Tomorrow, Occasional Papers Number 1. It goes back to 1913. a vision of the remedy, of how to depopulate and so on, right? And how rural folks would not be given all the benefits of the elite who had natural right to rule things, basically. We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers or men of learning or of science. That was funded by the Rockefellers, 1913. Mm-hmm. That goes for the world, folks. So nothing's ever what it seems to be. We live through a dream, in a sense. But the dream is managed by those who manage and own and believe that they own the world. If they own your mind, because if it's not yours, someone else will own it, folks. Do you realize that it's true right wing government, the meaning of it would be closer to anarchy? An anarchist basically would say, don't bother me and I won't bother you. No rules, see? The rules that apply to each situation and each person who you come in contact with. Don't bother me and I won't bother you. That's true. That'd be the true right-wingism, for those who don't quite know that. Leftism is a strong government, a state. The state is God and controls everything. It's the system the elites prefer, because then everyone is born and trained to obey. For those who don't quite know that. But don't follow people because they're put out in front of you to vote for. They're picked in advance and vetted too in advance. So put that up. Again, you know, you find that Brave New World had Soma and so on, and how Aldous Huxley talked about drugs being used tremendously on the populations to control them. And it's just astonishing to me to see so many articles that are advocating drugs that are basically were always put down as being illegal because of their psychotropic effects and getting pushed. It's good things that people on the love drug. It's called a love drug, you see, MDMA. It's a love drug. You know? So this is your opinion given to you right away. People on love drug, MDMA, still know who to trust, it says. It makes people more cooperative, not gullible. So for recreational users, ecstasy has long been associated with a harmonious mindset. Now there's research to back that up. And a new study of MDMA, the ecstasy's main ingredient, the drug, indeed made people more cooperative, but only with trustworthy partners. You see, there you go. There's your new study. I told you about all these studies. That's from this article, from an old one too. It's quite good, actually. But conducted at King's College London, the study is the first to examine MDMA's impact on cooperative behaviour in detail. Getting back to what I just mentioned about the government and their psychological units and behavioural impact units and so on, working with them. This is one of these articles, you see. And again, King's College London, given a grant, they're all living in grants, all these different people, and they churn out these reports after studying. Researchers gave 20 healthy adult men, either a typical recreational dose of MDMA or a placebo. The participants then played an online game against an unseen opponent, either cooperating or competing for points. If both chose to cooperate, they both got points. See, that falls into the previous article I mentioned too about they'd even give blood, right? As an example. So if you cooperate, you get points and so on. It's just too easy. And folk are getting manipulated all the time with their computers. It really is sad that. Because when it was announced, people thought they were going to have freedom maybe for the first time. Really. Of, at least for thought expression or whatever, but it's all been taken away, naturally. You can't have that, say, your owners. Also, I just want to touch, too, it's an article, it's in the paper, but it's just pretty typical. Sacramento salon owner claims California homeless crisis forcing her to relocate after 15 years because she's grown sick of multiple break-ins and cleaning up syringes, urine and feces from outside her premises every day. I mean, you can imagine how the folk in the 50s and 60s would have ever, if you'd given them a story like that, they'd been utterly horrified and couldn't go into shock. But now it's quite common. It's all the old values that kept everything working, and folk helping each other too, that have been destroyed. Cultural war, total. You see, that's total cultural war. That's how you take down a country. Forget weaponry of all other kinds, physical hardware, you know, the cultural war. Has been the big one to take everybody down. It worked so well. And even Gramsci said that too, for rather than try to force the people to change, you simply become their culture, and then you start to gradually change it from within until you, so you take over the culture industry, or you create a culture industry of entertainment and so on. Many ways to do it. And then take over academia. You actually plan how many generations it will take before you're in charge. Today, they really judge a change of generations in, say, 10, 20-year periods. Boom, boom, boom. That's how fast you can get another crop coming up. with a further change in mind, a very old technique actually. And then an article that says that YouTube algorithm pushes videos with children to paedophiles, report says, but there's no great uproar about that, is there? Again, with all the cultural war and hyper-sexualization of everything through entertainment for so many years and television and so on, and now the internet, I don't think you can get folk upset about too much anymore. It's sad, but it's true, when values are destroyed. And when actually that becomes entertainment. I mean, even the Epstein scandal, Jeffrey Epstein scandal, didn't really have the impact that folks would have had even 20 years beforehand. But now that they're watching, like, you know, is it 40 or 50 Shades of Grey and all the rest of it is a standard fair and Game of Thrones and God knows what else, you can't get folk. They've been contaminated. As the terminology is actually used, contamination, once it happens, then you've conquered them. And then tech firms must give up their awkward secret that humans are listening to pretty well everything you're doing and all the different programs that you're using, such as Apple's Siri and Google's Assistant and Alexa Voice Assistant, etc., etc. Of course they are, folks. And I mean, and the other ones too, it gives you a whole bunch of them here that are totally spying on you. And they've had articles out by different agencies, have come out from the agencies themselves, admitting that they've used these techniques to spy on people in their homes, by the police, everybody else, yada, yada, yada. There is no privacy. And I think we should get over that, shouldn't we, and accept it. That's just the way it is. But anyway, that's about all I've got time for, really. I'm sorry if it's not too detailed. Maybe it is. I have no idea. I don't really plan what I'm going to talk about. But just a casual scanning of what's given out for news nowadays, for this week especially. That's about all there is, really. And added to it, too, by things that haven't been said, because it's obvious, isn't it? It really is obvious with your behavioural teams working with governments and working on you with internet services as well, that it's very evident that you're being trained not to even really expect news. And that is the new system. Yeah, anything to do with governments, what they're up to, or the bills they're going to pass, whatever, all that's to eventually get scrubbed. You're getting trained into a new authoritative way of doing. Now that you've accepted that you're ruled by new laws since 9/11 because of the anti-terrorism laws and so on, then the next step is now here's how you're governed, a la Club of Rome idea, on behalf of the elites. Remember, folks, you can buy the books and discs at cuttingthroughmatrix.com. And list down from my main website all the other sites I have. They're all listed on the com site, cuttingthroughmatrix.com. And you could buy the books and discs or donate to me to keep me ticking along here. I should have to keep always reminding people because it's, as we all know, we're all getting hard up for cash now because the currency is really devalued. I think they said 40% since the last crash in 2007 and 8. And Canada definitely is so. The dollar's down. The purchasing power, if I can buy for a dollar, is 40% less per dollar than it was back then. It was bad enough then. But there you go. So anyway, go on the website and again, you can find out how to donate. You can send cash. You can use international postal money orders. If you're in Canada, use a postal money order. There's PayPal. There's other means to, or you can send a check. And that'll be okay. Help me tick along. And I thank you for the folk who email, even for the stacks of folk, most of them. I have a poor audience, apparently. But that's okay. Yes, they're all people. And I get to know different ones across the planet and their situations and so on. And it's good. It's good to be in touch with people who are real, with real physical problems and so on, and real financial problems. And all the natural problems that we have today because of the system we're living in. It's across the world. It's interesting to find out just how similar all their problems are with the governments and finances and again this rather open tyranny really we're seeing today with what you're told, this coercion, the threats you're getting now if you start to ask questions or put two and two together, which isn't difficult much in these days, I should say. It's not difficult in these days to put different things together when your government's forcing you or threatening you, in a sense, just to regurgitate the standard authorized opinions, which obviously are untrue in so many areas. And that's terribly sad. And I think it will be the undoing of lots of the things they're trying to cover up. Unless you get honesty coming out, then things just get worse and worse and worse. It builds up. Anyway, for myself, Alan Watson.
Tracks you can catch every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on UCY.tv.